Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight with the World War II Veterans Committee. We appreciate you staying on for at least the next hour. We have a lot of information to go over. We appreciate you being on the call. We hope you'll listen. We hope you'll ask questions. And the best way to ask questions is to hit 00 on the keypad on your phone. If you hit 0, we can get your question where you can ask it live on the air if you wish to, further on down the call. So again, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight with World War II veterans, the World War II Veterans Committee. That's who we are. We were talking to many veterans across the land. I believe we're talking to more than 30,000 veterans tonight. So we appreciate your participation. We hope you'll stay on the call. We hope you'll enjoy it. There's a lot of information coming your way. I'll be handing this call off to Jim in just a couple of minutes. We want more people to join the call before I bring Jim on. Again, if you do have a question for the people that are just joining us, please don't hesitate to hit 0. Hit 0 on the keypad on your phone, and what will happen is we'll get you and your question up to Jim and the gang that are on the phone as soon as we possibly can. I'm only going to repeat myself a couple more times, and then I'm going to hand this off to Jim. Welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. This is the World War II Veterans Committee. We appreciate you participating tonight. We hope you'll stay on the call for the next 59 minutes, as it were. If you do have a question, please don't hesitate to press 00 on the keypad on your phone. Jim, I'm going to hand this call off to you, and if you could take it away, that would be great. And I know in the context, you're going to ask people to hit 0 so they can ask a question. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kurt, and thank you all for your support of the World War II Veterans Committee and for joining me on this important call. I am truly very excited about it. It's the first time we've done this, and I'm looking forward to a real adventure tonight as we talk to two of the Doolittle Raiders. You have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to listen to two of the Raiders that took off on bombers from an aircraft carrier early in World War II with Colonel Doolittle to bomb Japan after the sneak attack at Pearl Harbor. On the call, we have Lieutenant Colonel Richard E. Cole, who was Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot on the raid, and also Major Tom Griffin, navigator on plane number 9. And finally, we have Tom Casey, an expert and researcher on the Doolittle Raid. He has spent years researching the story behind the story of the raid. And I'm sure he will give you some wonderful insight into what Paul Harvey would say is the rest of the story. All right, Tom, let's start with you. Can you give us a very brief description of the origins of the raid?
Okay, well, Jim, when the attack on Pearl Harbor took place and Roosevelt got the news, President Roosevelt got the news, the first thing he did was call in his chiefs of staff. And his first order of the day to the chiefs of staff was find a way to bomb Japan, get back and bomb Japan. Well, of course, the chiefs of staff realized that that was almost impossible. There was no base that we could handle our four-engine bombers, our B-17s, that could make a route to Japan and get back safely. And just by an accident, a young Navy officer, about a month into January, flying over Naval Air Station, noticed twin-engine bombers doing landings and takeoffs on a runway that was definitely designed to be a carrier deck for practice for Navy. And he made a mental note of that, and he took it back to Washington. And he asked the question, could a twin-engine bomber take off an aircraft carrier? That began a snowball, and the mission was actually began right there. The idea of putting bombers on a carrier and bombing Japan. 133 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, 16 B-25 Model B aircraft with 79 young airmen and a 45-year-old leader, James H. Doolittle, flew off a carrier, USS Hornet, and bombed near Tokyo in the Empire of Japan and managed to escape. And that was the beginning of the Doolittle Raid.
And what a great morale booster that was for the American people. I know in all the time we've been working with World War II veterans and supporters, it's the Doolittle Raid above all else that they identify with even to this day. Colonel Cole, you were Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot. How did it come about that he was the one that designed this mission?
Jimmy Doolittle was working as a product chief up in Michigan, where they made B-24s, and he was tagged by General Arnold to come and take over this project. He took over the project on the 17th of January in 1942.
Yeah, anything else? General Arnold, of course, was the head of the Army Air Corps, right?
Yes, at that time he was the chief of staff of the Army Air Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And he told Jimmy that he had a blank check for equipment, people, and just about anything he would need.
Mm-hmm. Tom Casey, you want to add to that?
Well, going back to the beginning of how this all began as far as the idea, this young Navy officer, it was around January 9th when a Navy officer named Francis Lowe was ordered to go down to Norfolk, Virginia and do an exam of the Hornet and go through some inspection tours with the Hornet. She was going through her sea trials at the time. And it was at this time when he was flying back from Norfolk to Virginia when he flew over the Navy station at Norfolk and looked down and he saw the twin engine bombers doing this takeoff procedure. When he got to the Pentagon, he went right to his superior, Captain Duncan, and he told Duncan, he said, is there any chance that a twin-engine bomber can take off an aircraft carrier? Duncan couldn't answer that question, so they went to Admiral King.
Who's the chief of naval operations.
Chief of staff
right.
operations. Mm-hmm. And he shook his head. He said he couldn't answer that. So mm-hmm. he said, let's go to Hap Arnold's office and see what he would say about it. So they went to Hap Arnold, and they discussed it with it, and Hap Arnold said, I can't answer that question, but I just brought a gentleman back on staff, and his name is James H. Doolittle, and he had just commissioned him as a major, so they brought Doolittle into the equation, and that's when everything started to come together. In the meantime, the Navy Department, realizing that this might happen, this might work, they went ahead and started working on logistics and how to use the USS Hornet on the mission.
How about the use of the B-25? Obviously, that was not a Navy bomber. It was an Army Air Corps bomber. How was that redesigned in order to suit the needs of the raid? Major Griffin, would you like to talk about that?
How was the B-25 adjusted for the raid?
Yeah.
I'm going to be hard-pressed to tell you just exactly what they did, but they made changes in the B-25 and its capacity for takeoff. We knew we were going to have to get fully loaded B-25 bombers off the deck of the carrier in about, I think it amounted to about 350 or 400 feet. We had a lot of things to experiment before we were ready to go on this thing.
Yeah, obviously that had never been done before.
Never been done. And we learned some of the shortcomings of the B-25 and some of the good things that could be developed with it for this type of raid. And this is the type of raid that was so successful to us as the war went on, these surprise raids by our bombers off of carriers and things like that.
All right, Kurt, I think we have a question from a caller.
Yeah, we have a question that came in earlier, and I wanted to remind people who just joined on the call, if you want to ask a question, please press 00 on the keypad on your phone. If you have a question, press 00 on the keypad on your phone. What will happen is one of our people will take down your question. You'll get to ask it live, but we have a couple that came in from the web earlier, and this first question comes in from, oddly, Jim, and the question is, what was it like when you came back home? Who wants to answer that, please?
From the Doolittle raid, of course.
Right. Well, this is Major Griffin.
Some of us were held over in China. We went on from the Doolittle raid into China, bailed out there, and ended up in Chongqing, the headquarters of Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese. There again, some of us stayed. We did leave a few planes and personnel with him before it was all over. And in my case, I stayed there about a week with him and then was sent down to India. And in the course of the next month or so, because of these flights that we were taking, I was assigned to a hospital till I got over it. So that's about as far as I can go at that time, because it took some time, about a month later, before I was able to fly back to the States.
All right. Yes, Colonel Cole.
Yes. Initially, we were told that if we survived the raid, we would get to come home. Well, things didn't work out quite that way. I got home 14 months later. There were 20 of us that remained in the CBI.
All right, let's pause right here for a second and remind our audience that the World War II Veterans Committee works to teach our young people about the greatest generation, and we need your help. There are so many young people that have never heard the story of the Doolittle Raiders or really even much about World War II and the greatest generation. We want to make sure that young people know about their story and other veterans' service and sacrifice. So I hope you will help us bring more young people to our upcoming Veterans Conference here in Washington, D.C. For $25, you can help support one student to attend our annual conference for one day. For $50, you can help support one student to attend for 2 days. For $250, you can help sponsor a veteran come to the conference and speak to these young people. And if you make a $500 donation today, you can help sponsor one of the four Doolittle Raiders to come to the conference and speak to the young people. If you make that $500 donation today, I will send you a poster of Jimmy Doolittle signed by four of the Doolittle Raiders. And any donation of $25 or more, and I will send you a commemorative Doolittle Raider hat.
Jim, I want to jump in. I want to remind people they can donate right now by pressing 7. Press 7 on the keypad on your phone, and we have some people standing by right now. We have people in the office working tirelessly, so please press 7 if you'd like to donate either $25, $50, $250, or $500. We'd really appreciate anything. So press 7. Press 7 on the keypad on your phone now. I think we're ready for our first live question, if we can. Would you like to take one?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take Jerry. Jerry, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Jerry, where are you from, and what's your question?
It was a comment. I'm from Red Bluff, California. I'm a 100% disabled Navy veteran. In 1991, I met the 10 survivors at Beale Air Force Base with Jimmy Doolittle's granddaughter. I met and spoke with them then and thanked them then. I just want to thank the survivors again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
And we do appreciate your call, and we appreciate your interest in the historical aspects of this raid, which were many and quite profound.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let me add my thanks. Let's pick up the conversation, or the story, I should say. Originally, the raiders were told to proceed to China and pick up a signal that would tell you where to land. That didn't happen, right? What was the story there? Colonel Cole or Tom?
Well, the story is that they were supposed to have a portable Homer at the place we were supposed to land and pick up gas in China. And unfortunately, that Homer was aboard an airplane that crashed, and so we ended up arriving over China with no Homer in the middle of a big front that eliminated all chances for us to make any kind of approach to an airfield in China. Our only course was to continue flying until the fuel was gone and bail out or belly land.
Let's acquaint our listeners also with the original plan, and in terms of when you were supposed to launch, how far from Japan, and how far you actually ended up launching.
The original plan was set up that we were to leave the carrier on the 19th at dusk. That was changed due to the fact that we were picked up by a Japanese picket ship, which was about 700 miles east of Japan, and consequently we had to launch because the fishing boat had sent a message back to Japan that they saw two carriers.
So that made it necessary then to launch prematurely, obviously, and that had a severe impact on your fuel supply.
Yeah. And as a result, we ended up over Tokyo at high noon on the 18th, which was a surprise to them because they knew we were there, but they didn't know exactly when it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The other fact was that they had just completed a air raid exercise, and I know that most people thought that we were still part of the air raid exercise, so it diminished the surprise.
Any recollections you'd like to talk about, Major Griffin?
I have very many recollections about what he's talking about.
Okay, all right, well, let's hear it.
We went down to street level, you might say, to fly across Japan, and we finally located our target up ahead, and we pulled up to 500 feet, which is was the lowest safe altitude, and dropped our bombs and eliminated that aircraft factory there. It wasn't our initial target, but it was the one that was handiest for us, and we succeeded in wiping it out. And then we dropped back down to rooftop level and flew out of Japan, back out to sea, as though we were going back to a carrier. And then after we got out about a half an hour, we turned right and paralleled the Japanese islands way down to the southern tip and then across towards China itself. I can't remember the exact time we got into China, but we pulled up as we got there and flew in till we ran out of gas and bailed out in China.
Let me remind our listeners again, if you'd like to talk personally to the Raiders, ask them a question, just please hit zero and we will put you in contact with them. What was your training like getting ready for the raid back in the States, Colonel Cole and Major Griffin?
Originally, Colonel Doolittle wanted to try and give every participant some 50 hours of training, but there were some delays and so forth like that, and we ended up, I think, about everybody got about 30 hours of training. The navigators, the navigation thing, the bombing, and the turret people, the gunners, and so forth, we got about 30 hours.
Major Griffin, would you like to add anything there?
I think he's covered it pretty well. I'm getting a little hazy on the exact dates of some of these things, you know, when we did this and when we did that. I just know that we flew across towards China feeling pretty good about things. We're right down on the deck then, as low as we could get, and we pulled up and bombed our targets and flew into China until we ran out of gas and bailed out.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kurt, do you have a poll question you'd like to ask?
We do. The polling question, you get to vote on the keypad on your phone. You press either 1, 2, 3, or 4. So here goes with our first polling question of the night. What is most important to you? Press 1 if it's educating young people about veterans' experiences. Press 2 if it's providing a service to veterans. Press 3 if it's preserving and remembering our veterans' sacrifice. Press 4 if it's teaching students about battles and wars. Or press 5 if it's combating political correctness about World War II. Now, again, the question is, what is the most important thing for you? Press 1 if it's educating young people about veterans' experiences. Press 2 if it's providing a service to veterans. Press 3 if it's preserving and remembering our veterans' sacrifice. Press 4 if it's teaching students about battles and wars. Press 5 if it's combating political correctness about World War II. We really, really appreciate your participation on this. Jim, are you ready for another question?
Sure.
Let's take Bill then. Bill, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Bill, where are you from and what's your question or statement, please?
I'm from Signal Mountain, Tennessee. And my question is, how good does that Hennessy taste that the guys drink every year? And how many Raiders are left?
There are 5 Raiders left, and I don't
know
where the liquid was from, Tennessee or someplace else, but it was good.
Major Griffin?
I don't remember any of that. Maybe I used too much of it to begin with.
Let me ask you, an obvious question, and that is, you served under one of the greatest heroes of World War II. What was Jimmy Doolittle like as a person? Major Griffin?
He was a wonderful man. Great leader, outstanding leader. And he had quite the experiences way back at the end of World War II. He made a considerable contribution to the ending of the First World War. And one of the outstanding aviators that the United States had all through those tempestuous years there. We were very lucky to have Jimmy Doolittle flying with us and leading so many of our people into combat the way he did.
Colonel Cole, your reminiscences of a personal reminiscence of Jimmy Doolittle.
Well, Colonel Doolittle was education-oriented from the beginning. He had a bachelor's degree from California. He was the first MIT doctor's degree from MIT. And a lot of people thought he was a big show-off and so forth. But there was the method to his madness, and he was a great leader, and we were very fortunate.
All right, folks, let me just pause to remind you once again that we do need support to enable us to accomplish our mission of bringing the message of the greatest generation, two of whom you're hearing right now, to the latest generation. So if you hit seven, you can donate to the World War II Veterans Committee. It's a tax-deductible contribution, and I hope you'll do that. We will put your donation to good work. All right, Kurt, another question?
We have another question. We're going to take a question from Norm. Norm, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Norm, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
I'm from Chesterfield, Missouri, and my question is this. I think Colonel Cole was the co-pilot with Jimmy Doolittle, and my question, were you the first B-25 off the carrier, and was your B-25 the first to arrive at the target over Tokyo?
We were the first airplane to take off of the carrier, and we were the first airplane to drop our bombs on Japan soil. Actually, the Fred Bremer, the bombardier, was the first man over Tokyo.
And you say that because he was in the nose of the plane, I assume, right?
Yeah, right. That's it. We had the easiest target, I think, because originally we were supposed to arrive over China or Japan at night, and we had incendiary bombs, and our target was northwest Tokyo, so we couldn't hardly miss.
Yeah, pretty big place, right? All right, Kurt, do we have another caller?
We do. We have another call. We're going to take Ray next. Ray, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Ray, where are you from, and what's your question, please?
I'm from Floyd Knobs, Indiana. And my question is, how many of the Raiders actually made it over? Well, I'm sure they all made it over Japan, but how many actually made it back home after being captured, and how many was killed?
How many made it back home? I think... The figures like that, I'm not sure about how many. I know we left some over there in the China-India theater, and about over half of us flew right directly home to start new training programs in the States.
All right, Tom Casey, you want to amplify on that?
Yes, the total amount of crews that flew on the mission, there were 79 crew members and Jimmy Doolittle, and... At the end of the mission, there were three Raiders that were killed doing bailout and landing procedures. Nobody was lost over Japan. And the 15 of the 16 aircraft did make it to China. We lost them all. They all had to bail out or crash land. One aircraft did survive and went to Russia. So the five members that went to Russia came home. We had eight captured by the Japanese, four of which were scheduled to be executed. When the execution date came, only three were executed. One of the Raiders had passed away in prison, but we did get four. Those prisoners did come home. So it was a total of 68.
Colonel Cole, you want to add anything to that?
Yes, there is one survivor left, Bobby Height, who lives in Tennessee.
What was your experience like? Tell us about bailing out and being on the ground.
As far as I was concerned, that standing in the airplane at night in the middle of this big thunderstorm and the bad weather, looking down at the hole, the black hole, wondering what was going to happen next. The correct course was... I didn't want to do the alternative, and so we hit the silk.
Okay. Meaning open, you deployed your parachute.
Yeah.
Right. All right, Kurt, another question?
We have another question, and I just a couple of things of position here. If you have a question, don't hesitate to press 00 on the keypad on your phone. And as Jim had asked for before, if you'd like to donate now, please press 7 on the keypad on your phone if you'd like to donate. We do have one operator standing by to help out right now. Everybody else, I think, is tied up. So please press 7 if you'd like to donate. Meanwhile, we're going to take John. John, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. John, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
I'm from Florida. I have a statement to make. I'm wearing a cap that was given by the Raiders, by the Doolittle Raiders. And I remember that incident very well. I want to thank all the guys that participated. So that's about it.
Well, thank you for your call. It's, I think we all owe a deep debt of gratitude to the Raiders and for what they mean to our country. They were truly inspirational figures in World War II and helped to raise the morale of a country that was feeling pretty bad after Pearl Harbor. Major Griffin, you want to talk about your experience on the ground?
In China?
Yeah.
Yes, I bailed out in the middle of the night like everybody did. And for the next 2 or 3 weeks, I wandered back towards Chongqing with the help of friendly Chinese. The Japanese were after us or any of the Doolittle Raiders they could get a hold of. And so we had to depend on the Chinese to get us back into Chongqing. And by the time I got back to Chongqing, I had the very good fortune of meeting Chiang Kai-shek and Madam Chiang Kai-shek.
Really?
And actually, they had me and I think at that time one or two other raiders that had gotten that far back into China, they had us at their home for dinner, which was something I remember to this day very well indeed.
I certainly think so. I mean, Madam Chiang, as I recall, spoke fluent English, right?
Well, she graduated from college here in America. She was very well educated, of course. And it was a rare privilege to get to know them and to have dinner with them in their home. And two or three other raiders and I happened to get at Chongqing at a time when they were both there, and they invited us to their home.
That's a remarkable remarkable.
That was one of the big highlights for me for being over in China at that time.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Don't forget, folks, to hit 0 if you'd like to ask a question or make a statement to or about the Raiders. Kurt, do we have another call?
We have Charlie next. Charlie, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Charlie, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
Well, I'm also from St. Louis County, Crestwoods, where I live. But my question was about how long it did take the Navy to sink that fishing boat or whatever it was out there that warned the Chinese ahead, the Japanese ahead of time. And secondly, on the bailout, did you have any trouble, you two fellows, did you have any trouble locating the rest of you, and did anybody get hurt on the bailout and have to be limped or carried? And thirdly there, I forgot what I was going to say. So
you've covered a lot of territory there, Charlie. So, all right, Colonel Cole, you want to take a first crack at this?
As I remember it, it was a very short time before the Navy sank the picket boat, and as far as my bailout, Charlie, I was very fortunate. My chute drifted over a pine tree, which was about 15 feet tall, and I never hit the ground. Tom?
Yeah.
I had a very similar experience in bailing out in China at night like that. I know that it was a violent storm that we bailed out, and we had pulled up to, I think, 10,000 feet to make sure we were high enough not to run into any of the mountains
right
in that part of China. So after we bailed out, I know that we were in very violent weather because my chute would fold up and I would see it over here. Then it would fold up, fold again, and go on the other side and collapse. Hmm. And I felt like I was standing still, and the only thing moving was my chute. But what was happening, I was in a tremendous pendulum like
that. Right, right.
Now, if I'd hit the side of a mountain or a tree or something in that condition, I would have been in big trouble. But my chute settled over my head, fortunately, and the next thing I know, a branch of a tree hit my face, and I was sitting on the side of a mountain where I stayed for the rest of the night. I couldn't see anything past my feet, so I just stayed right there until the next day.
So it was a violent rainstorm?
Violent wind and rainstorm. Right. Yeah.
I'd like to add something.
Sure.
One of the raiders' name was Waldo Byther, and when he got the bailout order in the back because of the rough air, something on his chute hooked on the D-ring and opened the chute in the airplane. He gathered the chute up in his arms and jumped out. And fortunately, the parachute man.
Unbelievable. I mean, the whole mission is kind of unbelievable to me. But I hear details like that, and it makes it even all the more remarkable. Let me pause, folks, to remind you again, if you'd like to support the mission of the World War II Veterans Committee, hit 7. I just wanted to remind you that for $25, you can help support one student attending our national conference. And we've got hundreds of students that we bring into Washington, D.C., including high school students, ROTC, midshipmen, and cadets from all the military academies. It's a wonderful opportunity for them to hear about ethics and all the other virtues that we associate with military service. So please help us out if you could. For $50, you can support one student to attend for 2 days. For $250, you can help sponsor a veteran to come to the conference to speak to these young people. And if you make a $500 donation today to help sponsor one of the four Doolittle Raiders to come to the conference and speak to the gathering, if you make that $500 donation today, we'll send you a poster of Jimmy Doolittle. And I should say, this is a limited signed print edition of this marvelous portrait signed by four of the Doolittle Raiders. And any donation of $25 or more, and you'll get a commemorative Doolittle Raider hat. All right.
Thank you, Jim. I think we're going to try and do it. By the way, to donate, you press 7. Press 7 on the keypad on your phone if you'd like to donate. We have a couple of people standing by. So by all means, if you'd like to donate, please press 7, 7 on the keypad on your phone. Next, we're going to do a polling question if we can, and it's our last one of the night. How would you prefer the World War II Veterans Committee contact you? If you'd like it by phone, press 1. By mail, regular old mail, press 2. Email, press 3. Calls like this, press 4. Carrier pigeon, press 5. How would you prefer the World War II Veterans Committee contact you? Press 1 for phone, 2 for regular old mail, 3 for email, 4 for calls like this, or 5 by carrier pigeon. I want to see the person who votes for carrier pigeon. Oh, there you go. We got one. Anyway, we're going to take another question right now if we can. I got to dig it up right now. Just 1 second. Let me line it up. There we go. Neil, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Neil, what's your question or statement? First of all, where are you from?
I'm from St. Joseph, Missouri. I was a junior in high school when the war broke out. And our airport here at St. Joe was a home base for the B-25 bombers. We were all very proud to have that accommodation of the military with us. But I want to commend those men of the Doolittle Raid and all the veterans. I'm a veteran myself, but our debt to those veterans will never be paid in full. I don't matter how much the government does, it still cannot fill that debt that we owe those men and women that have served. And I feel that the schools do not get enough education about this. I mean, it's the schools that pulled away from this honor that these men fought and served for and the things that they have for that. But my question was to one of the boys was, how long was your actual flying time? I know one of them said it was dark when they got to China, but about what time in the morning did they take off of the aircraft carrier?
It took an hour for all the airplanes to depart the carrier after we got the launch order. In the case of the first airplane, it was a little over 13 hours flying time. I don't know about Tom's airplanes.
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah. Just about that time, we were ready to bail out, yes.
One of the things you might remember is that I think that we flew the whole mission, that's all the airplanes, at an average altitude of about 200 feet. In our case, we did not have an automatic pilot, so it was work.
Yeah, you weren't flying a computer in those days, right? Right. Tell me, when you left the deck of the Hornet, I've seen film of that, and all the planes sort of took a dip. Did any of you think you might not get off the deck and end up in the water?
Well, I know that all the airplanes remaining on the deck were sitting there wondering if we were going
to the first, right?
Go on and drink. But in our airplane, we took off and climbed right out. One pilot, there was a mix-up in the cockpit, and the flaps were not down. And he made it with a few excitable moments at the end of the deck, but he got off just fine.
All right, Kurt, another caller?
We have one that came in via web, believe it or not, and the question goes like this. If there was one thing you'd like to teach young people, what would it be?
Tom?
Oh, golly, there's a lot of things in there. Starting Board of Education here. There's a lot of things in relation to our Air Force, you mean, or just what to the general education?
Yeah, well, general education, especially I would think history. I believe that's a major shortcoming in our
school. Well, there's a wonderful story of American history. I would just augment it and teach more history to the young people than they're teaching now. I think it's all for the plus side.
Colonel Cole?
I think it's important if we could impart the desire for young people to know about history and use that to educate themselves.
I know personally as a father of four that in history courses in high school that World War II is very near the end of the curriculum, and frequently it's not gotten to at all. And I should mention here that the World War II Veterans Committee does have as part of its mission the education of the young. We have a marvelous World War II curriculum that's been designed. It's several hundred pages, and it's adaptable by schools, and they can get that online. And, of course, we bring students to the conference here in Washington, and we're developing a speaker in schools program also. But, teaching American history and teaching it right is a major challenge all across the country, as far as I can see.
I think we're ready for another question, if that's okay.
All right.
We're going to take Bob. Bob, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Bob, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
I'm from Southwick, Mass., and I'm a Navy veteran of World War II. I was 14 and a half at Pearl Harbor, so I got in on the tail end of the war. But I had the pleasure of reading about the raid, and I thank all the participants for their efforts, for their service, and I thank the committee, the Veterans Committee, for what they're doing in the area of education. I spent a year going door to door to raise money for the World War II Memorial, and the response was so bad that I realized that many people didn't understand. They had never studied World War II, and so I started buying books about World War II and reading them and then giving them to the high school library in the local community where I live, in the hopes that this would improve their knowledge of World War II. So I thank everybody for what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. It's deeply appreciated, and we're doing our best on a limited budget. And you can help us in that effort by pressing 7 to make a donation. If you make a donation of $25 or more, you get a free commemorative Doolittle Raider hat. Speaking of, or continuing our conversation about the raid, did you two meet up with Jimmy Doolittle in China, or when did you next see him? Major Griffin?
We didn't meet up with General Doolittle in China because he got transportation out of China and back to Washington, D.C. much faster than we did.
Well, tell us what happened to him. What was his story upon?
I can answer that. We arrived over China a little bit north of where the most of the other airplanes shored into China. And we were by ourselves. After the bailout, we were all together the next night. And fortunately, none of us have been injured and so forth. And we hooked up with the Chinese, and they were of great help by providing us with transportation and the fact that they kept ahead of the Japanese who were after us. And we finally ended up to a place called Hanyang, where a C-47 landed and picked us up and took us to Chongqing, which was the provisional capital at that time. We also got to meet Madame Shang.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And we stayed there for maybe a week and ended up in Calcutta, India, because all of our clothes were the only things we had on. We had to be outfitted and so forth.
I should mention, folks, if you'd like to ask a question of the Doolittle Raiders or make a statement, please press zero and we'll put you on the air. You both mentioned Madam Chiang Kai-shek. Was the Chinese government informed of the raid beforehand?
It's my understanding that they were not notified about it. Somewhere along the line, a communication line broke down. Mm. I don't know. You have a different idea?
No, I don't. I don't think they were told about our plans at that time. They were too secretive and too speculative. If the Japanese knew what our plans were and when we were coming, we never would have gotten there in those days.
Yeah.
So I believe it was a secret all the way.
Good point. Kirk, do we have another caller?
We do have another caller. It's Van. Van, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Van, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
Charleston, South Carolina. I just wanted to thank them for what they did. I was in World War II with old General Patton at the Battle of the Bulge, so I know I know what fighting is all about. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. We're just happy that our service was productive.
Thank you for your call. Much appreciated. The Tom Casey, talk about the overall aftermath of the raid. It sounds like the raiders and planes were all over China and as far away as India, right?
Right. No, the aircraft, a lot of people have the impression because of some footage that has been shown over the years that the raiders were flying in formations after they left the carrier. That didn't happen. Each aircraft flew individually to their targets. Some planes did see each other in the route. But as they reached their targets and they started out to head out to China, one of the things that did happen that was sort of a miracle, and some mentioned, you know, that might be the hand of God that helped them. Halfway across the China Sea, of course, they were all worried, especially Tom and his crew and Dick watching his fuel tank, watching his gauges going down, and thinking that they were going to have a tough time making China. And on top of that, they run into these tremendous storms. They lost all visibility. Now they're flying on instrument. And so they're fighting the gas situation. And suddenly, I think Tom could tell this story better than anything, they picked up a tailwind. They found a stream of air that was flowing east to west. That little tailwind gave them 25 knot wind, pushed those airplanes to China. Otherwise, they would never made it. I think, Tom, you can verify that, right?
We had a tremendous break in the weather heading across the China Sea when we got that tailwind. That's all we needed. Most of our planes would not have reached the China coast and would have ditched in the water. 100
miles off of the offshore.
Miles off of China. But that break in the weather made all the difference and saved the lives of a bunch of our people. Right. getting us into China before we bailed out.
As we mentioned earlier, too, one of the aircraft, all 15 aircraft that went to China were lost. One aircraft that did go to Russia. The pilot, plane number 8, the pilot decided that he was eating too much fuel, and he knew he wasn't going to make China. So he told his navigator to break out charts, and he went to Vladivostok. The only B-25 that landed on its rear that day.
Mm-hmm. And what happened? What happened to that plane? That crew, I should say.
Well, the crew was instantly put in prison. And as a matter of fact, they were put in a number of prisons as they were brought across the continent and managed to escape after a while. They did get out. But the B-25, we're still looking for that. It was the only B-25.
How did they escape, and to where did they escape?
Actually, I think the last place they were at was Valid.
They went into Vladivostok.
Yeah, but they came out of, I think they came out of, they were brought down to almost to the borders of Iran was where they finally made their escape.
They got to the British embassy in Iran.
Yeah. The British embassy in Iran,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They were lucky.
Yeah.
They were very lucky.
So you had crew members scattered over 1,000-mile territory, it sounds like, if you count, Vladivostok to Iran and India.
And everyone, Jim, had, if you could sit down with every raider, the stories that they tell individually on what they had to go through, like how Dick found Colonel Cole.
Right.
I mean, how
right.
Colonel Cole found Colonel Doolittle is a story in itself. But the stories are fantastic on their survival and how they made it.
Well, that story about the tailwind, I have to say, is one I had not heard before. That makes the whole mission truly even more remarkable. Maybe God's intervention, as you say.
Yes.
Kurt, another caller?
We do. We have Henry next. Henry, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Henry, where are you from, and what's your question or statement, please?
My name is Henry. I was in World War II in the 8th Air Force in England. I flew missions in a B-17. And sometimes we had trouble getting off the ground. And what I was wondering is if the B-25s that the Doolittle Raiders used, did they have any way of increasing the horsepower in the engines by getting more RPM or more manifold pressure, or was it all just practice and learning how to use the normal amount of power to get off the ground, off the boat, I mean, carrier?
I think we pretty much used the B-25 that we were furnished, and whatever shortcomings they had in takeoffs and so forth, we had to work out ourselves, and it turned out to be an excellent airplane for what we needed, flying across the channel and bombing the Germans over there.
Colonel Cole?
One of the things that is little known that Jimmy Doolittle talked with Lindbergh. Lindbergh had gone to Guadalcanal where they were flying a P-38s, and he taught them about leaning back the mixture on their airplane and saving gasoline. And as a result of that conversation with Lindbergh, we did the same thing with the B-25. In addition, we started out with new propellers on the airplane, that it helped us conserve gasoline.
All right, folks, let me remind you again, if you'd like to help the World War II Veterans Committee in our mission of preserving the legacy of the greatest generation and passing that on to the latest generation, you can press 7 to donate. Anyone who contributes $25 or more gets a free Doolittle Raider hat. So please help us to increase the knowledge of our young people about the World War II generation, without which we would not be where we are today and would not have the freedoms that we have today. Kurt, do you have another caller?
We do have another caller. It's Mark. Mark, welcome to our telephone town hall meeting we're having tonight. Mark, where are you from, and what's your question, please?
I'm from Toledo, Ohio, and I just heard about the Raiders back when I was 1960. I was about 10 years old when I saw 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, and I just been following it ever since and just think it's the greatest mission that we've ever accomplished, and those are the bravest guys, I think. And I just would ask Mr. Cole on if Doolittle let him fly at all, or if he had the yoke the whole time.
Well, Mark, We didn't have an automatic pilot, and it was necessary that we trade off because one of us had to watch the tachometer, because if the tachometer started to waver back and forth, there was a good indication that that engine was going to shut down. And since we were flying at a low altitude, that wasn't a good idea. And Tom says, anyway, Colonel Doolittle wasn't what we used to call time hogs. he was very benevolent, and I thank him for that.
Mark, I'm a fellow Buckeye, so thank you very much for calling in and helping us to honor the Raiders. Colonel Cole, I've got to ask, you were in the cockpit a long time there with Jimmy Doolittle. What did you talk about? Or were you able, were you able to converse?
Well, mainly it was a one-way conversation from him to me. And the crew and I had talked over trying to do everything we could to make the conditions easier for him. So I didn't volunteer any chit-chat because I don't believe he was in the mind to have chit-chat.
So you weren't talking about the weather or sports or women?
We had no contract with anybody. Uh-huh. So, I remembered, as we left the carrier and we circled back over it, I thought to myself, we have just separated ourselves from civilization. That the next whatever amount of time we had left to flying was going to depend on our ingenuity and Mother Nature and the good Lord.
Yeah. It's just a phenomenal story. I mean, launching there and, as you say, just being out of contact with civilization and completing the mission and then going into darkness and a violent storm and bailing out the whole mission. It's almost unlikely to have happened. I mean, it's so amazing.
Yeah, fortunately, it ended well.
Yes, yeah, for most of you. We're about out of time here. Kurt, let me toss it back to you.
Yeah, just before you wrap up, Jim, I wanted to remind people we couldn't get to every question tonight, and we apologize for that, but we're only on for an hour. So if you had a statement or a comment that you wanted to leave, leave us a voicemail at the end of this call. Stay to the end of the call and leave us a voicemail, even if you didn't press zero. Now, if you didn't have time to donate, you can still donate. We can give you a call back. If you press 1 on the keypad on your phone now, we'll give you a call back tomorrow so you can donate. So press 1 now if you want to donate, and we'll give you a shout back tomorrow. And we really appreciate the participation. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Again, don't forget to leave those voicemails with questions. And if you want us to get back to you, we need your name and your phone number and perhaps your email address so we can get back to you even quicker. So if you're going to leave a voicemail and you want to have us get back to you, we have to have a fighting chance by having a phone number and your name and perhaps an email address. Jim, it's all yours. Go ahead, please.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Let me just wrap up by saying what an honor it's been to spend an hour with Colonel Dick Cole and Major Tom Griffin. I mean, two really extraordinary American heroes. Tom Casey, you're wonderful as well, and it's just been great. I feel really privileged to have been here this hour, and I want to thank you all for listening. And again, we're grateful for any support you can give the World War II Veterans Committee. Thank you very much for being with us.